Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
Gentlemen, welcome to another edition of the Heart Grapevine Radio. My name is Matthew Lund. I am the host with the most here alongside the first son of the legendary Stu Hart, Mr. Smith Hart. How are you today, Smith?
Great, son. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I understand you're up in the mountains today, are you?
Yes, I am.
Well, I hope we're going to keep signal with you there today. Going to hopefully be joined here very shortly by some very dignified luminaries here. We got on our show today Tony Villano, who's the president of the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, and Cowboy Johnny Mantell. Tell us your memories of Johnny Mantell. Didn't he work in Stampede with you, Smith?
He's worked with a lot of my brothers in various places, and he was the gentleman that nominated my father for Hall of Fame induction to the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame when it was still in Amsterdam, New York. And that was the main reason I wanted to do this show with both Tony Villano and Cowboy Mantell, was to do it in advance of their inaugural Hall of Fame induction coming up. I think it's all around the weekend of May 23rd.
Well, hopefully, do we have Johnny or Tony on the line with us right now?
I hope so.
Hello?
Hello?
Tony.
Hello?
How are you?
I'm doing well. John, you on?
Tony, I hear your voice. Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I guess
Matt's looking to ask us questions, and I think he just found out we're both on.
We're glad to have both of you with us today. We're excited for a very special Hall of Fame weekend coming up. And, just a little bit about the history of the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. Mr. Villano, can you tell us how this all got started?
Well, I'm a deputy commissioner with the New York State Athletic Commission. I oversee professional boxing and professional wrestling. And back in 1999, I was doing a show with George Steele. And afterwards, we went out for a couple of drinks, and I kind of asked him, what is it for you after this is over? And he said, what do you mean by that? I said, well, is there like a Hall of Fame or something like that? And he said, no, well, there's a Hall of Fame, but there's no brick and mortar. He kind of has dinner for us, and he gives us a plaque, and that's about it. And I I live in New York State. We have 23 halls of fame, more than any state in the union. And I sit on the board of directors for the Boxing Hall of Fame for the last 23 years. And so I live in a radius of 90 miles from about 7 halls of fame, so I get an idea what the inductions are like. And being a deputy commissioner, I get to see the wrestlers. So I was talking to Steele, and I said, you know, Jim, his name is Jim Myers. I said, you know, Jim, I says, if I could put something together, if I could write to the Board of Regents in New York State and ask for a charter to start a brick-and-mortar Hall of Fame, would you help me open doors since they know who you are better than they know who I am? And I'm a businessman, so I said, I'll try to check the credits and debits. I said, and you open up the doors. So we were kind of drinking more than we should have, and I think we were just passing time away. And when I got home, I started penning the letter, and that was in September of 99. December 17th of 99, I received a charter in the mail to open up the Hall of Fame. I called Steele up and asked him if he remembered, and I think he vaguely did. But he said, I'm with you. And I said, don't buck on me now. And he said, no, I'm with you. And he was very instrumental in opening a lot of doors and opening up a hall for us. And that's pretty much the ground part of it. And then after that, it was looking for a facility and kind of exhausted ourselves in looking for a facility. And I wanted to go home. I didn't want to do it anymore. I was tired. Look one more place. So I looked, and it was a small place, only 20 by 40, 800 square feet. But I didn't have anything, so to me, that was a good place to start. So I asked him what the address was. He told me it was 123 Broadway. So I went back. I called Steele. I said, hey, Steele, I think I got a small place. It's a suite. It's only 20 by 40, but we don't even have anything to put on the wall, so obviously it's big enough. So he said, all right. And he said, what's the address? And I said, 123 Broadway. And he said, Tony? He says, I can't believe God was with you. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, it's the last place you saw. You didn't want to look anymore. And the address is 123 Broadway. And I said, well, what the hell does that mean? And he says, well, it's a wrestling address, he goes. 123 is the pin count. When we go to a draw, we say, hey, we're going Broadway. And I said, get out of here. And he said, I'm telling you. He goes, I can't believe that's our place. And that was it. It was that's how it actually we started it.
Well, that's pretty awesome. And Mr. Mantell, what is your position now with the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame?
Well, as Tony was the president of the board in New York, now it's the baton sort of been handed off to myself and the board of directors in Wichita Falls, so now I'm the president of the board here in Wichita Falls.
And I understand that the move actually just happened here. We just had a move from Amsterdam, New York to Wichita Falls just this year. What prompted the move to bring it down to Wichita Falls?
Who are you asking?
Sorry?
Who are you asking?
Either Mr. Villano or Mr. Mantell, whoever. I don't know the reason why it moved down.
Here's the deal. I had a couple of years left in the lease, and to move an object like this, it takes longer than a year to do. And about a year and a half prior, I was talking to John, and John was interested in working with the hall all the time, and he wanted to actually move up to Amsterdam and made the attempt to do so, but it didn't work out for him. But I put an RFP, request for a proposal, out to a bunch of cities, and about 6 or 7 responded, and Wichita Falls was basically one of them. And Johnny living down in that area, if you know, he's the pride of Montague County, which is near Wichita Falls, and legitimately a local celebrity there, and he was able to open a few doors and ask a few people. And John and I worked on this for over a year, but we really didn't talk to anybody about it in case it didn't succeed. We didn't want to look like egg on our face or really, you know, start trouble because I still had a couple of years left on the lease. But John went out and talked to a few people, and I was, you know, a guide for him on, like, you know, how to set up the board and what we were looking for and how much we should pay and things like that. And John went out and did it. And we got a beautiful facility there. And John could tell you about the facility and maybe what he went through when we were talking about it. John?
Well, I got to first off say that, you know, without the guidance of what everybody did in New York, none of this would be possible. And with the move to Wichita Falls, we have found a community and a city that has really stepped behind it and has supported it and has wanted it to succeed. And that marriage between the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame and the city of Wichita Falls will be something for a long time to move forward with. We have the support of the chamber, the city council, the mayor. There's even our state senators in that town, and he's been to the hall already. So the move itself, which started really the last day of November of last year when Tony and his wife started packing this production up, which is the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame, got started, and it sort of came to a conclusion when everything arrived from New York the middle of January and 30,000 pounds of memorabilia and history and 880 boxes of material and cabinets and stuff like that. And then that was the process of going through that and not rearranging it, but setting it back up and in location. And it's been a real effort, a real community effort. We've had great volunteers, and the city, again, has stepped up. And we're right now preparing for our largest fundraiser of the year, which is our induction weekend. And it's sort of in wide open mode right now as some of the wrestlers and some of the people that are coming in from all over the world for this 15th induction will start arriving in Wichita Falls tomorrow, and we'll be in Wichita Falls through, some of them don't leave till Tuesday. So the city of Wichita Falls is going to get a real experience of their first attempt at doing the induction weekend, which right now seems pretty successful as we're about 40 tickets from being sold out at the induction ceremony for Saturday night.
Oh, wow.
But that place holds 400 people.
Yeah.
424 seats in our banquet room.
So what he's telling me is there's going to be like 400 people there for dinner. So that's good, not including the people that are coming in on Thursday for a there's a comedy club type thing setting that they've got going. On Friday, they've got a beautiful outdoors wrestling show planned. Saturday, they've got a convention, a meet and greet, their induction ceremony. The hall will be open all day. They'll be selling all kinds of new paraphernalia that say Wichita Falls on it. So make sure you buy that stuff because this will be your first year of Wichita Falls stuff.
That makes it historic in itself.
Yeah, that's going to be historic in itself. And John, also, I sent John also induction shirts for prior years that were in Schenectady and in Amsterdam. So you have an opportunity to pick up some of this stuff from induction days from three different places.
Toronto number.
Yeah, and I think, too, Tony, one of the things we're really being blessed with right now, and I sure don't want to jinx it, but the weather says we're going to have 78 and 80 degrees on Friday and Saturday, almost a full moon, and beautiful weather for the outdoor wrestling under the stars, which is actually just two blocks down from where the museum is. So it's really turning into an exciting weekend. And Butcher Rashawn will be here Wednesday. Teddy Gorge Dinkle will be in tomorrow. And it really starts picking up starting Wednesday evening and Thursday morning, guys, and women and guys both coming in for the induction weekend.
I've been to the Hall of Fame in Amsterdam, New York, a number of times. I've always found it to be an incredible museum. Smith and I had been down there for multiple induction ceremonies. One of the things that strikes me at is the fact that that you have so much memorabilia, but it's not just memorabilia, not just autographs, not just ring-worn gear, but you have some of the original championship belts and as far back as I know, as the 60s and such. And how did you, Mr. Bruno, if you don't mind me asking, how did you get to have so many of the wrestlers donating such great stuff? I remember Johnny Walker was walking through there talking about how some of the robes were made by his wife and, you know, like some really amazing pieces. How did you get to get so much donations when you were first getting those things launched?
Well, to be honest with you, you have to ask. And when I would go to a show, I would ask. Or work a show, I would ask. If I brought them in for autograph signings, I would never ask them until they came. And after they came, I said, if you buy into what we're doing, then give us something. I'm not going to bring you in and ask you to give me stuff because then you're feeling like I'm using you. I'm bringing you in. You do the autograph thing. I'm going to show you around. If you like this, if you like what we're doing, and you want to be part of it, leave something for us to display or send something that you can display. And then what happens, too, is the collector or the historian. These guys have rooms for us. Or the people that pass on and their family wants you to have it. Like, when you were talking about the belts from the 60s, we actually display a 21 belt, and we also display a 1927 belt. Dinky Gardner got a 1927, 22, 27, 32, light heavyweight champion of the world, and he received that belt in Columbus, Ohio from Al Hast, and we proudly display that belt, and that's a beautiful belt as well. So there's a lot of memorabilia there. When the wrestlers would come and get inducted, they would bring stuff. If we brought them in for autograph signings, they brought stuff. If they just heard about it, they sent stuff. And after 16 years, because that's how long I was into it, it started collecting. And I told Johnny, I said, you know, John, it's 16 years I've been collecting this stuff, putting it up on the wall. I feel sorry for you because I'm sending you all 16 years at one time. So I says, you know, you're going to get 30,000 pounds at one time. And I don't know if he finished putting the stuff up as of yet, but I knew he had some still stuff in boxes. But I guess that's kind of good in a way because the next time that you come, you're going to see more new stuff. You'll see new stuff. And there's one thing you have to learn about a museum. You have to change it over. You can't let the guy say, hey, I've been there before. I don't want to go. But if you keep changing it up or even rotate your stock, people will come in and they'll see it a little bit different or they see more stuff up. And they say, okay, you know, I want to see what they're doing now. I want to see what they're doing this time. You know, so that's just something I could tell Johnny, you know, if he may not know it, but, you know, rotate the stock, put the new stuff up, and let these people see something different because that'll motivate them to come a second time.
Yeah, and one of the things that we're doing, too, is once we get through this banquet, we're going to start having a territory of the month and a wrestler of the month from back in the day, and everything that we have on that person or that area of the country that we're running, we're going to display in one location as that sort of highlight of the month, which we really feel like will bring people back to it after they've seen it once. They'll come back and see somebody special that they really liked growing up or saw on TV. It's like Tony said, it's an ongoing process. Eric Emery sent me the original belt from 1987 at the Sportatorium in Dallas when the world-class group started a world junior heavyweight title, We just received that belt that now displays at the hall. Tiger Conway Jr. is bringing his father's original Negro heavyweight championship belt from sometime in the 40s this weekend to display at the hall. So as Tony said, and like my dad taught me as a kid, if you don't ask, the question is always no. And through those kind of efforts, through Tony doing it and now passing it on to me and me doing it, I'm asking those questions, and the guys have been so gracious. Gary Young has sent a couple robes in. Brian Adidas is sending boots and an outfit up this weekend from the World Class Days. We think we're going to get finally to display Kerry's boots and jacket that he finally got that belonged to, or his daughter finally got that belonged to Kerry Von Erich, and we feel like we're getting closer to getting maybe those pieces that show in the hall alongside David's Yellow Rose of Texas jacket. So there's just so much history with the sport of professional wrestling, no matter where you go around the world, that it is it's just now trying to collect it and get it in one location so that we can show the fans of the sport and show the men and women that have come through and worked this sport that they have a home and the history of the sport has a home. So that's really the only, I tell people all the time, the only dog I have in the fight is to make this Hall of Fame now get to the next level. And Tony gives a beautiful analogy of the Hall of Fame. Somebody sort of had to conceive it and come up with the idea. Then they had to give birth to it. Then after birth, it learned to crawl. And after crawling, it learned to walk. And it was really getting into a really fast walk where it was in New York. And Tony, with his business sense and knowing how things run, he sort of knew that it had to move and get rejuvenated and get a new life to it. And I really believe that Wichita Falls has gone to Adidas and got the best track shoes made and are lacing them up on our feet as we're getting ready to start running around the track with this Hall of Fame and museum. And when it gets to running around the track full time, it'll be something that visitors from around the world will come and see. And right now I can tell you our induction banquet has two gentlemen from Japan, a gentleman from Germany, and a young man from Australia coming to Wichita Falls for this first induction in Wichita Falls. So that's a pretty good sign of what's to come.
Well, tell them, Johnny, when you went to open up the very first weekend with WrestleMania, the first people that walked through your door was from where?
Finland. They could not get flights into DFW for WrestleMania week, so they had to fly into Amarillo. And because they flew into Amarillo and rented their car, they had to drive right by the museum and Hall of Fame in Wichita Falls. So they came, stopped, spent the night, ate at a restaurant, and was at the hall when we opened the doors that morning. The first week we had representatives from six countries.
Guys. I don't want to keep you guys.
We had representatives from seven countries and 16 states the first week we were open, and we're right now over 2,000 people through the door in our first really, oh, what, Tony, now 6 weeks? Five and a half weeks of being open. We're a little over 2,000 people into the Hall of Fame since we've opened. So we're really proud of what the city and Tony and the board in New York and everybody that's contributed to this Hall of Fame, because everything you see in the Hall of Fame has either been donated or put on loan from, like Tony said, the families, the wrestlers themselves, or however the circumstance was. And we've just completed our library room, which looks like a library with all the magazines and books and stuff in it, where you, if you are going to go in there, it'll be a supervised visit with gloves to research or see something. And Midwestern State University is getting ready to give us a couple interns that are studying to be library-type people that are going to come and go through 68 boxes of research from a historian in the wrestling business that had donated his research to the Hall of Fame. And we're going to file and put all that up so that there's two people right now working on doctorates that want to come and use that paperwork as research. So we're working on that research room as we speak.
And when you guys got to understand, the Hall of Fame that we have is different than any other Hall of Fame. When you people think, you know, the wrestling fan out there thinks that pro wrestling started in like 1980, or they come in and say, I got stuff back from 1980. We actually, the oldest piece displayed there is just after the Civil War, around 1870.
Wow.
So we go way back, okay, and we go back from the beginning. When we wanted to start this Hall of Fame, I could have went with what was hot at that time and just stayed in the 70s and 80s and 90s, but we couldn't do that. To make this legitimate, it's like being in the contractor's business. You have to lay a good foundation before you could build the house. The house could look nice, but if it's sitting on something that's going to cave, it's not any good. So we had to go and take the chance and build the great foundation. And what I mean by that is that we had to go start right at the beginning, as far back as we could find, okay? It may even go back farther, but we haven't found anything yet like that. But the very first induction ceremony was kind of hard because everybody was kind of, you know, everybody was like dead, you know, or no one showed up. And the fans came. I said, well, who's going to come to this? We got a 20 by 40 sparsely decorated room. I've got real I didn't really have a lot of big names coming. And I just didn't know if it was going to work. But it did work, and a lot of people did come, and it gave me motivation to go to the next year, to the next year. And then as it grown, and like I said, what Johnny mentioned is you've got that crawl, walk, run stages of life. And when John, I turned it over to John, we weren't crawling and we weren't, running, but we were walking at a pretty fast gait. It's time to pass the baton on, and John's got a larger facility. He's got a larger area of people to draw from. He's got more hotels. He's got more people involved, new ideas and bringing the stuff up. And to make it, we didn't start this thing to hold on to it and to just run it the way you wanted to run it. We started this thing to honor professional wrestlers for as long as we can. And to make that happen, it has to go to the next stage, and you have to give it up. You have to let the next guy who has new ideas, new blood, new friends, new contacts, new fan base. And that's exactly what's happening to it now. If you don't mind, I would like John to mention who's coming this weekend. Who, you know, buy those last couple of tickets. Who's going to be at that meet and greet? Who's going to be inducted this week? It's only in a couple of days. Because we're failing to mention that, and I think that's really a big part of our conversation.
Well, I'll tell you, the weekend has grown just seems like every day. And the inductees that are coming for this year's class is Greg the Hammer Valentine and Lalani Kai. And we have a video coming in from Steve Austin, who tore his shoulder up at WrestleMania and is still in a sling, and it will be in a sling for another 3 weeks, pressed to his chest. But he is going to make a video to send to us. Sergeant Slaughter has been booked for a year at a Veterans and Heroes weekend, but yet his agent is already making reservations and things for him to come in next year to receive his ring. And
what about Ata
Maivia, the Rock's mom, Peter Maivia's daughter, is coming to represent their family. Joe Pazendak's son and three grandsons will come represent Joe Pazendak. And then after that, we have Terry Funk, Stan Hansen, Wendy Richter, Joyce Grable, J.J. Dillon, Brian Blair,
Davey O'Hannon,
Bill Irwin, Wild Bill Irwin's coming in.
I understand Ross Hart will be there. Ross will be coming in to represent the Hart family.
The Hart family.
What about Gene Okerlund? Is he coming?
Gene Okerlund is not going to make it at this time. We're hoping that should change between now and his flight that's supposed to be on Friday, but as of this taping of this show right now, he is in a holding pattern about coming in this weekend.
Okay. And tell him about Ron Simmons will be at the wrestling show.
We have a young man here in the state of Texas that goes around to trade shows, and he does and I'm not a gaming person on a computer, but he does some kind of wrestling tournament on TV screens, and he comes and sets up two stations and two screens, and two people compete on the computer screen in a wrestling match, and he has a tournament that day, and at the end of the day, he gives the winner of the tournament a belt, and he has Ron Simmons coming in to sign autographs at his table for 4 hours on Saturday. So, that's one of the highlights of the day. And all those names that I mentioned before, they'll all be at the autograph line on Saturday from 1 to 3.
And on Thursday night, I heard that there's like a wrestler that's doing a comedy show or something. Who's that wrestler?
Yeah, that's Lynn Denton, the grappler. He's one of these guys like Mick Foley and Jim Duggan now that are doing a little stand-up around the country. And he's going to come in and do about 45 minutes to 50 minutes of his stand-up routine. And then we're going to bring all the wrestlers that are in the crowd that night on Thursday night up, and they're going to do a Q&A for about another 45 or 50 minutes with the huge crowd that's going to be at Iron Horse Pub. Again, just a block and a half down the street from where the museum's at.
On Saturday, Friday night, that wrestling show, though, you've got also some kind of fling there going on. Don't you have a bunch of people set up to sell items and stuff as well?
Yeah, we're calling it Wrestling Under the Stars on 8th and Ohio on Friday night, and we have food trucks coming in and parking. We're setting up chairs and bleachers right in the middle of the street. The Shepherd Air Force Base has given graciously sending us 15 of the enlisted people from the base that day to help us with that evening. And then they've also bought 100 tickets for the show that night, and all 100 of their people will show up in uniform, and we'll make a special sort of presentation when the Hall of Famers come out to the ringside to Shepherd Air Force Base for all their help and their support in this project. So it's turning into a weekend no different than what took place in New York over the last 15 years, but we're just trying to add to it and make it bigger and better every year, and we're really excited about the weekend. Like I said, people start getting into town tomorrow, and I have to be up in the morning at 6 o'clock to do a TV show in the morning to advertise for the weekend and tell everybody in the morning show about what's going on. And we're just calling it Professionals Wrestling's taking over downtown Wichita Falls, and it may never be the same again. So you need to come and check that weekend out and see what all we're doing.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned a great list of incredible Hall of Famers this year, and I always love the Hall of Fame, Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, because you have very clearly marked divisions. You have the Pioneer Division, you have the Television Division, you have the Modern Era, you have a Women's Division. It's very calculated, and it's a very strategic process as well with the actual inductions. I know there's a large board, but can you go into a bit of what the process is like? WWE, it just seems like a very arbitrary choice of one person, whoever he feels is going to make him some money that year. But with this Hall of Fame, it's a very strategic process. And do you mind going into a little bit of detail, Mr. Mantell, about that process?
Well, the process is set up very similar to other major sport Hall of Fames. We have a screening, what we call the screening committee, and that screening committee sets the ballot, and that screening committee goes through records and through family and fan interaction when they write letters and send information in about their favorite wrestler or their uncle or their aunt and their life in the business. And the screening committee goes through all that process to create a ballot. And once that ballot has been created and approved by the board of directors, then that ballot then is mailed out to the voting committee. And then that voting committee is made up of former or Hall of Fame people that are in the Hall of Fame living, superstars that have been in this business forever that probably you would consider future Hall of Famers, and other dignitaries within the sport, historians, sports writers, and those ballots are sent out to the voting committee. The voting committee then votes, sends the votes back in. They're tallied, again sent to the board for approval on the vote total and count. And once that's done, then we make the announcement of who's being inducted into the next class. And it is a system that's being done, and it's a great system in the fact that you're not getting in because you threw somebody an extra $100 or because you did somebody a favor. That's not going to get you elected to the Hall of Fame. Your body of work and your time in this sport will get you inducted into this Hall of Fame if the voters think you're that top of the crop or the cream on the top of that milk that deserves to be in there.
And there's no celebrity wing here either.
No.
You have to understand, too, the selection committee, which puts the ballot together before they send it out, they don't have any voting rights, okay? So they're not going to be swayed. You know, they may put someone on, but then they debate on who's going on and that type of stuff. But that's a process that took me a long time to put together. And I had to try to do it to where, like, you know, I couldn't show favoritism, and we had to have checks and balances. We had to be able to, where we don't have ties, how to break ties and things like this. And with the help of Bob Oates, I don't know if you guys know Bob Oates. He's a historian and a lawyer out of California. And Bob Bryla, Johnny Fantozzi, a few of these guys that got together. And every year that we did it, we kept tweaking it. The first year, we just kind of put it out there the best we could. And then the next year, tweaked it. The next year, tweaked it and tweaked it. Right up until the point where, like, Johnny was a chairman of the selection committee as well about 3-4 years ago. So we change it every 2 years because we don't want anybody to have a lock on it. Or, hey, I could get you in, you know, I'll take care of you, I'll get you on the ballot. That's not going to happen. You're going to only be there on that thing for 2 years, and you have no voting rights. Because we try to make this as clean as possible. And when they voted in, they're voted in. And then you could only receive one ring, even if you've been voted in more than one category. Like, say, a Ray Stevens, right? He was voted in, but then he was also put in on a tag team. But, you know, if he was living, you wouldn't give him two rings, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, and if you don't know the person that's up on the ballot, we ask you to research them. And we just don't ask you to vote just for the hell of voting. Research the person or abstain the vote, you know. And when the votes come back, it's almost like a popularity contest. And whoever gets the most amount of votes is the winner in that category. Now, remember one thing, and I hope your fans that are listening remember, don't send requests to the Hall of Fame and ask Johnny to put somebody in the hall, because Johnny doesn't have the right. As the president in the hall only displays memorabilia and puts on the event for those that have been chosen once a year. That's our function. We do not do the choosing. The president or the hall does not choose. We only display their memorabilia and honor them when they're chosen. Other people do it. Their peers do it. And that's the difference between the selection. But when you mentioned before that the WWE, we have two different functions here. We have a not-for-profit and we have a for-profit. Mr. McMahon is a very smart and intelligent guy. He could be teaching a course at Wharton. I mean, he's on how to make money, because he has to put asses in seats, and that's the way he does it. And he only goes back from the 70s. He doesn't put other promoters in. He doesn't put midgets in. He doesn't put the Ed Stranger Lewis's in or the Jim Londoses and stuff. He's got to put in the people that were with him and how they're going to make money in their territory. If they're doing something in southern Florida, they're bringing in some Spanish people. If they're going to do something in Dallas or something, he's going to bring in the local, the Funks and the Stan Hansons and all those type of people. Because this is what he does. He has to make money doing that. We are not for profit. We are in it for a certain reason, and that is to honor those that came before you and honor those that are worthy of it. I was asked one time, who is my best guy that made the Hall of Fame? What is your best inductee? Who is he? I said, they're all the same because they all climbed Mount Everest. They may have taken different paths out of climbing Mount Everest, but they always made it to the top. So you never want to be judgmental and say, well, I like this guy better than that guy, because that's not your function as the president. You're just to run the hall and to honor all of those that have been chosen. How they got there is really nobody's business, because they all climbed the mountain. And at the end of the day, they all put their flags on top of the mountain and they got there. So I never answered that question, who is your best? Because I feel that they all did it a little bit differently, but they all made it, all being honored by their peers. We have people in our Hall of Fame that would never make any other Hall of Fame. And a lot of our Hall of Fame, if you look now, and you can check this out, the year after or the 2 years afterwards, the other Hall of Fame usually takes our choices. I think we set the trend. I really do. I never really said this before, but I'm no longer the president, so if they yell at us, they're going to yell at Johnny. So the thing about it is, I always said, you know, they seem to steal our guys afterwards, you know, whether it be the Freebirds, you know, or whether it would be Frank Goodish. What was his name again, Frank's name?
Bruce Brody.
Yeah, Bruce Brody or anything. I mean, they put in these guys. I don't even know if Brody's in there, but I know he was contemplating being in there. But the thing about it is, like, they take a lot of our guys, and they rightly should, because we do a complete process on this. And another thing John was mentioning was that he received a bunch of boxes from when a historian passed. Well, we've been promised by 3 or 4 or 5 different historians, when I pass, you're going to get all our stuff. And that really means a lot to us. And because they trust us and they look at us as being the Hall of Fame. I have seen tough guys literally break down and cry when they were either inducted or saw their items being displayed. Very humbling experience. I remember when Killer Kowalski walked up to me and pulled me to the side and said, Tony, I want to tell you something right to your face. People forgot who I was. I used to fill up Madison Square Garden. I walk by Madison Square Garden now, and people don't know who I am. This Hall of Fame made me be reborn. This Hall of Fame gives me a new life. This Hall of Fame carries me on for generations that they'll know who Killer Kowalski was. And he said it to me with tears in his eyes, where I even got teary about it. I didn't even know I was doing that.
I felt that same thing again when I saw Johnny Walker walking through the Hall of Fame. Exactly, and he saw the robe that Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, and he saw the robe of Greg Valentine.
His wife made that.
Exactly, and he got teary-eyed seeing that, because there's nowhere else in the world he's going to see that. Exactly. One question I have here, another question I should say, is that you have an incredible library. I've been in the library that was in New York. It was absolutely amazing. And, you know, a historian like Greg Oliver would sit in there for hours just trying to soak up as much information about the history, Tom Burke as well. And you have a great library. You have great memorabilia. Have you had any inways in trying to get, like, video footage and, you know, video libraries? Have you had any kind of discussions with library owners about getting any such things?
Well, first I want to say something, then I'm going to pass it off to Johnny. I didn't have the financial means to do what we wanted to do. What we wanted to do eventually was to put everything on computer And if you wanted to see a wrestler, you came in, you popped his name in the computer, a picture of him comes, a bio comes of him comes, and then a short clip of his wrestling ability or some kind of match that he had. I'm told that actually we have film and stuff that we have in. We have a 1923 wrestling film in a box from Korea, and I never got to see it because it had 2.5-inch thick film. And John was thinking that we might be able to get to see that. But there's a lot of different film and stuff. There's a lot of books. We have over 100 bound books from magazines that date back to the 50s all the way up in pristine condition that were donated to us by Mr. Roberts, who died, and he was from a friend of Tom Burke's, and he gave this to us. And these things, you can't let the normal people touch them, you know? But we were also, we got to the point where our respectability was that I used to have the Smithsonian Institute called me. TV shows like Jay Leno's show, when Moolah and May would get on, they would ask us about stuff. We would get calls from all these newspapers, and I'm talking the Boston Globe, the New York papers, the Post, the Times, all these different papers calls. When someone would die, they would want like a picture or a bio of them and stuff like that. So I really didn't have the capability of doing as much as I wanted to do. But moving it on to Johnny and having the University of Texas at Arlington and stuff like that, he's picking up people that will probably make that a reality in the near future, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we're in the process right now of inventorying and taking at least a shot at how much footage is on tapes. Like Tony said, we have a reel of film from 1923 Korea, and it has a run sheet in it that's being interpreted for us for this weekend, so we can sort of release that this weekend and tell everybody what it says on this sheet, who's working on the card. The one thing in English that's on that run sheet is there's two matches that say title. So I don't know who was there and what title was there, but it does say title. We also have about 140 hours from a promotion that ran in Texas for a while of 3/4-inch television tape. We have about 120 hours of tape that was made by a group of gentlemen in Mississippi for a while as a promotion. We have some television tape coming down from Portland. And all that tape, the Hall of Fame will own. And right now I'm working with the 4B board in Wichita Falls, which is the hotel motel tax in town. And they're going to help us digitize and transfer all that film into a system that we can do, much like Tony said. You'll be able to look something up, pick a name or pick a match or pick an era, and then go back into our video library room and sit in a theater-type chair and watch it up on a big flat screen. That may not be till around Thanksgiving by the time we get all these tapes digitized and fixed and done, but that's in the works and working forward every day.
One of my close friends here in Toronto, he's actually got some original 1960s footage from Maple Leaf Wrestling here, you know, Carl Gotch, Billy Robinson, right all the way back to Yukon. Eric, we got a... And they had one of those 17 millimeters or whatever of Yukon Eric wrestling there. So it's a great collection, and you know there is so much great memorabilia and so much great footage out there, and it really it serves the business as a whole better by being honored and being collected and being preserved by an organization like the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. And, you know, this is, in my opinion, the one, the only, the true Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. I want to thank both of you for being a part of this here today. I think Smith, being up in the mountains, he might have lost his signal here. We might have lost Smith somewhere along the way. But I want to thank you both for your time here today. This weekend, it's going to be in Wichita Falls, the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame induction weekend. It's going to be a great time. I fervently wish I could be there this weekend, but I'll definitely be there next year for the Hall of Fame induction. And it's you guys are you're doing the business an incredible favor by preserving the history better than anybody. And I want to thank
Matt,
you both for that.
I just
want to
say one thing before we leave, that Johnny did something that I never did, and I had it since almost the day I opened because I didn't have the room for it. Johnny assembled Angelo Savoldi's wrestling ring. And
oh, wow.
It's up. It's from the 1900s. That it was used in all of New York area, New Jersey, the polo grounds, all those things like that that are gone now. But this thing still exists, and John was able to reassemble it, and it's on display at the Hall of Fame.
Hey, and I got to say something. I got to say something real quick, too, for Tony. And Tony will appreciate this. Tony's guided me a lot of this trip and has told me not what to do, but how to approach things and how to think about things and how to make sure we're always doing the right thing for this nonprofit and for the history of wrestling. And all those things, Tony, you've told me have come true. And right now, I don't have to tell you how busy it is right now. It's sort of like trying to hang paper without any glue. And but it's a lot of fun. And again, it's been a passion, and I was so fortunate to get to travel in this business and now to get to do it from this side and to help. And like Tony said, to hear a guy cry on the phone that he thinks a pretty tough guy because he's being honored and is so happy about being honored, it's a pretty special moment. So for all the hard work that Tony and his board did, to all the hard work that myself and my wife Kay, and she's really the brains of the outfit, but the two of us do, and the board here, it's a passion of love to make this what it is. And Tony, Dolores and Danny Hodge on Saturday said for me to tell you hello.
Well, I appreciate it. He's a legend, and I'm honored and I'm humbled. I'm no longer in the business. I'm probably going to be a footnote in the years to come, but I did get this a lot of the really true legends of the sport, and I got to know them personally, talk to them on the phone, talk to them in person, and I'm just humbled by especially Danny Hodge, who I feel is probably number one out of all the wrestlers. Even they mark out when Dan Hodge walks in a room.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
One of the toughest men that ever lived. Well, thank you, Ben. Is there anything else you guys want to push in terms of the or promote for this weekend coming up? Any other notes that you guys want to make sure we plug out there today?
PWHF.org. PWHF.org. Professional wrestling.
The only thing I want to say now, I know this thing is, you know, like we're over with the interview, you can cut and everything. But me personally, Johnny, I want to personally thank Kay. She works her you-know-what off. She doesn't get the recognition I think that she should get. But I will tell you something. Tell her for me that I personally appreciate her and thank her personally.
Did you get your letter in the mail?
I did. You mean those ceremonial ticket things?
A couple tickets and your little check in it for the tax and
for the tax to finish up the tax season and close out.
And that was
appreciate that. Yep.
And that was the first envelope of a couple coming to you from this weekend. So
all I can say is I'm holding one box for a small period of time until I know everything's all done. And the box that I'm holding you is the box that has all the financials from the very first entry to my very last entry. The first entry in 1999 or 2000 to my last entry in 2015. One of a kind thing, never being duplicated. You'll be getting that, and that'll go into the archives.
Absolutely. It's all history, and the history of this thing is what we're trying to preserve and do, and it's just growing by the day.
Franklin, I where's my picture?
I got that on my list. I promise you. It's on my notebook. As soon as I see him, that's the first thing I'm going to tell him.
Okay, Matt, thank you so much for putting up with us. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you both for being on. We've had a great interview, and best of luck this weekend to a great organization, and I encourage everybody listening to come check it out and be a part of it.
I appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Matt. Thanks,
Tony.
Right.
Have a great night.
All right, see you, John. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So once again, another great interview. Tony Villano and Johnny Mantell, the two presidents of the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. Very great to have them on. Unfortunately, we lost Smith about halfway through in the mountains somewhere, but we'll be back next week with another episode. Hopefully, we'll find Smith, and we're going to have Hugo Sivinovich on the line. Thank you very much, and have a great day, everyone.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs.
Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Hey everybody, this is Nick Wilkinson from TV Nation and Totally Driven Radio and Entertainment. Sadly, each year, approximately 3.6 million children become victims of child abuse. My latest ebook, Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect, explores the long-lasting effects abuse can have on victims. Explore life after the abuse ends and how we cope with the tragedies of the past. Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect is available on Kindle for only 99 cents. And don't forget to check out my website, actingnotreacting.com, a common sense approach to teens in crisis. Let's work together and make this world a better place. And remember, stay driven.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromHolmes.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12.
Are you ready to be totally driven? Totally Driven Entertainment Network has a full lineup of shows dedicated to total entertainment. Starting on Mondays, we have the always relevant and often hilarious Hard Talk with Big Daddy and Big Booty Trudy. That's at 6 p.m. And at 11 p.m., go 8 flights up and get your mind right. Tuesdays at noon, Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira covers professional wrestling news, rumors, and one-of-a-kind interviews with professional wrestling performers and insiders. At 8 p.m., join Smith Hart of the legendary Hart family dynasty for the Hart Grapevine as he goes behind the scenes and shares his knowledge of the professional wrestling industry and some truly remarkable special interviews, too. Welcome to Hump Day, Wednesdays, 9:30 a.m., the Coco and Wee Wee Show asks the age-old question, who do you love, who do you shove? And at 8 p.m., the Give No F's Cosplay Variety Hour brings you the best in cosplay, comics, video games, and more. Thursday nights at 5 p.m., Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira returns to the airwaves to cover professional wrestling news, results, and more. At 8 p.m., Totally Driven Radio, the show that started it all, brings you the best in topical conversations, celebrity interviews, exclusive musical guests, and so much more. Your Friday night would be incomplete without a trip to Uncle Shawnee's Playground. Join Uncle Shawnee at 8 p.m. and prepare to be offended, but, you know, in a good way. At 10 p.m., don't forget the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour, bringing back the golden age of professional wrestling. Saturday mornings at 10 a.m., the Mojo Sports Show starts your weekend off with a healthy dose of sports mojo. Get the latest news, scores, results, and more every Saturday morning. At 9 p.m., Totally Driven Radio rocks. Bay Ragney unleashes his inner beast as he takes you on a heavy metal journey and looks at the music he thinks rocks. That brings us to Sunday morning, the perfect time for a big weenie. At 10 a.m., the Big Weenie Castanini Show goes live around the world. And ending the week at 9 p.m. on Sunday nights, join the TV Nation for your weekly dose of the Nerd Herd and talk all things comics, TV, movies, and pop culture. Remember, get driven, stay driven.